Country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on lightresistanceradio.com, where lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots more news and views, and hardly know where to begin, but In the good news category, I would say, regarding the Wuhan flu, or sometimes called the coronavirus, is the fact that Japan, as of yesterday, has ended its state of emergency. They didn't have a lockdown. There's a lot of interesting things about this story. First of all, although Japan is right next to China, it has had very few deaths from coronavirus, and very few cases. For instance, to give it some perspective, it's a nation of 126.5 million people, so a little bit more than a third of the size of the United States. It has had a total of 17,000 cases. The cases in the United States are well over a million. It has had a total of 852 deaths. The deaths in the United States are now pushing 100,000. Don't forget, it's a third of the United States size, which means, okay, maybe they should have had about 2,500 deaths. If it was a nation of the size of the United States, on that proportion, the United States has had basically 100,000 deaths. Canada, which is much better off than the United States, has had something in the neighborhood of 6,400 deaths. At 38 million people, we are about a third the size of Japan. So they've done very, very well. Incidentally, they didn't have a lockdown. Why? Well, they had a state of emergency. Why? Because their constitution doesn't allow them to have a mandatory lockdown. I didn't know that. But I think that is great news. It's too bad our Mickey Mouse constitution, our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which actually is not, it's a Charter of Minority Privileges, and reduces rights. But anyway, our Charter of Rights and Freedoms makes no such guarantee. Okay, well, why the success in Japan? Well, this is where things become a little bit dicey. They didn't have a complete lockdown. Well, So it wasn't that they locked the country down better than we did. No, that's not the reason. So, okay, I buy. Why? Well, there's some interesting speculation. Some of it, of course, gets into very dangerous territory. Well, not for me, not for you, but because I know you're thinking people. But let's see. Well, one thing is the Japanese are very, very clean. Despite, long before coronavirus, they were very prone to keep themselves physically clean and wash their hands. Good precaution. This is all, of all the things you can do to fight the coronavirus or to safeguard yourself, probably the most surefire is the very simple expedient you were taught as a child. Wash your hands. Secondly, it's speculated that the Japanese are not particularly touchy-feely. There isn't a lot of embracing or kissing. I'm kind of neutral on that. Well, that is a fact. You don't see a lot of embracing the way you do, let's say, in among Italians or even many Westerners. That may have an effect on the other side. Japan's a very crowded place. There are 126.5 million people jammed onto quite small islands. And not all of that each island is that inhabitable. Having been to Japan, I can tell you that the area that's habitable on many parts of Japan are the coastal areas on these islands. The interior tends to be very mountainous, which wouldn't be able to support a very high population, which is the result being it further concentrates the population in the coastal areas. Okay, so we've got their good habits. The fact that they're not particularly touchy-feely, prone to kissing and embracing, that is certainly one theory. And then this is where it gets really, we're playing with dynamite on this one. Genetic. Could they be perhaps less susceptible than Europeans? Initial information that was given to me back in February suggested just the opposite, that the most vulnerable were South Chinese and Japanese, followed closely by North Chinese and Koreans, followed closely by Vietnamese and so on. That may have been wrong. It may not be genetic. But let us suppose it is behavioral. Now, yesterday I was noting that there are some hot spots for the coronavirus in Ontario. And at the daily conference by the Premier, much was made of this fact. But it was delicate how it wasn't shared with us really where these areas were. Well, in very general terms, the city of Windsor, and I have no explanation for that, Brampton, and parts of Toronto, but not all parts, and parts of Mississauga, but not all parts. Well, extrapolating from Brampton, Brampton is overwhelmingly East Indian and black. There are some white pockets, but the bulk of the population is foreign, or is East Indian or black. We're not told where the other pockets are within metropolitan Toronto. My very strong speculation, because from other things I've read, is that the areas are predominantly non-white. Well, what does that tell you? Well, it tells you something about habits. These people may not wash themselves as often or hand wash. Now, I know some people will ally, oh, it's poverty. Well, there are many poor Japanese. But poverty is not a very comforting explanation. Anyway, we'll probably come back to that. Oh, well, here's one time I do kind of approve of police laying charges. The BC Prosecution Service says that it has appointed a special prosecutor to oversee charges against three people in relation to allegations of mischief and trespass at the home of British Columbia Premier John Horgan. The service says a lawyer, Dirk Reinfeld, was appointed to avoid any potential for real or perceived improper influence in the administration of justice. And so it's appointed a special prosecutor. Reinfeld has approved criminal charges of mischief against Howard Breen, Regine Klein, and Mark Nycannon. Anti-pipeline protesters were arrested in February outside the premier's home in Langford, which is a suburb of Victoria. The Extinction Rebellion members said they planned to attempt a citizen's arrest of the premier in support of the Wet'suwet'en, that's an Indian tribe, hereditary chiefs who oppose the natural gas pipeline through their territory. Even though the elected, as opposed to the hereditary Wet'suwet'en chiefs, approve. I'm glad to see these anarchist, perhaps terrorists, might be a little strong, but lawless types, were arrested and will be charged. For far too long, people like that have gotten away with chronic misbehavior. Oh, well, speaking of chronic misbehavior, wouldn't you know, various Indian bands across Canada, not all, but some, are blocking highways and roads leading to their land, allowing, no one in, I don't know about that, but they don't want the coronavirus there. Okay, I can appreciate that. In some remote areas, there probably would be no legitimate reason other than business for somebody to go in or out. Some Indian bands are only reachable by air or water. And in cases like that, if they want to restrict access to their village or reserve, that's probably fair enough. However, there are other places where there are public highways that these lawless Indians are blocking. And you see, they're endlessly indulged in this stuff. We have the myth that they are First Nations. Well, they're not nations, they're tribes, part of Canada. In many cases, their land that they're occupying today isn't even their traditional land. For instance, the Mohawks of the Grand River Valley, one of the more militant Indian tribes or groups in Canada. The Mohawk First Nation, well, hee-haw. The Mohawks came from Upper New York State. They fought with the British in the American Revolutionary War and had to flee to Canada, where they were rewarded with land. Land which had been bought, not stolen, bought from another group of Indians who had genocided the previous group of Indians all within historical times. Lands along the Grand River were bought by General Haldimand of the British Army. Bought it from one group of Indians which had genocided the previous owners, the neutrals. They neutered the neutrals. So when the Mohawks make a big noise about their traditional land, that's not really their traditional land. Yeah, they've been on it for 250 years. Give or take. But we've had white settlement in Canada. We'll leave aside the Vikings and the Salutrian people. But let us say in recent historical times, as in the last 500 years, we've had white settlement in Canada in some places going back 400 years. So we indulge them in an awful lot of nonsense. Well, here are some aspects of the story. The Mchigin First Nation, they love the currently politically correct practice is to dream up these weird, unpronounceable spellings. It would be spelled this way: the it's M, capital M apostrophe, Chigeeng, the Mchigin. That would be pronouncing it the way it's written. Whether that's the pronunciation or not, I don't know. The First Nation on Ontario's Manitoulin Island has had a non-essential travel ban for a month now, including on two public highways, creating a flashpoint with neighboring residents and sparking inflammatory and racist social media posts. Yeah, this is the propagandistic bilge that comes out of our lamestream media. If you object to the Indians doing this lawlessly, then that these will be racist posts pointing out special privilege. If I don't want anybody coming down my little cul-de-sac where I live, do I have a right to string a roadblock across it? You have a few oil barrels or concrete blocks? No. And if I did, I'm sure the police would move in right quickly, remove them, and probably remove me in handcuffs. Now, we have a nation of special privilege, especially privileged minorities, who, keep up the drama, wail all the time about being disadvantaged. Anyway, these are public highways. Al McNevin, mayor of the neighboring municipality, asked the Ontario Provincial Police to ensure that Highway 540 and 551 remain open, but to no avail. He said the roadblocks can add as much as 45 minutes to a journey, and people get lost when trying to detour. So because these lawless Indians block a public highway, people have to take a very circuitous and not easy to find roadblock. And the OPP, that's the Ontario Provincial Police, do nothing. I know what, they're monitoring the situation. Monitoring the situation is modern bureaucracies for sitting on your duff and having another coffee at the Tim Hortons. Well, I should say outside the Tim Hortons, because you can't get in there these days. You can use the drive through the coronavirus, of course. People should riot because of this. And the lawlessness. Quote, most people during this pandemic are already on the edge from being isolated most of the time. It's a stressful situation, Mayor McNevin said. We're afraid the people at those roadblocks are mostly volunteers and may or may not have the training to keep people calm. And if people are angry, you could run into a situation where somebody would become aggressive. And we worry about the safety of both people at the checkpoint, he said. People might become aggressive. Well, when you've got thugs blocking the public highway, become aggressive? I would hope so. I would hope at some point people will just say, enough's enough, get out, get off the road here, or we will move you off the road. And that's what the police ought to be doing. But no, I'm sure they're monitoring the situation. And the good mayor, he's mostly concerned that somebody might get aggressive. Hey, they've already gotten aggressive. These thugs have already blocked public thoroughfare. Don't have the right to do that. First Nation, that's Indians, and local municipal leaders have been meeting to ease tension. Meanwhile, the OPP continued to warn the public of a travel advisory and recommend alternate routes. A travel advisory and recommend alternate routes. What a pathetic surrender to thuggery. Well, just to avoid a, as they sometimes say, a confrontation, you just avoid a confrontation, or take another route, or just stay home. You know, in taking our country back, citizens have got to stand up and say, no way. We're not allowed to block roads down here. These Indians should not be allowed to block. And these are highways. It's not even these roads go into their reserve and end there. There may be some argument in favor of, okay, they don't want visitors, fine. But through traffic, outrageous. I have what is becoming an increasingly typical experience today. It was time to renew my homeowner's insurance. And I had it with a particular company that I've had for a number of years. And I felt I was being overcharged. Now, a good friend of mine said, well, you ought to look up Binbrook Insurance in Hamilton. I said, why? Well, she said they were quite good. She was quite pleased with her service. So I thought, well, sure, that sounds like a good idea. I will give them a call. And I did that on Thursday, and I talked to somebody named Leonard. And he wanted to know, well, what were the particulars of my house. So I gave him the details, and he said, well, his desk was full, but he would try to have me an answer by Friday. That's the next day. I thought, well, you know, I'm sympathetic. You've got a lot of work to do. You're lucky you've got a lot of work to do. All sorts of Canadians are unemployed now, don't have any work. So anyway, he told me he would try for Friday. Well, Friday came and went, and no answer, no word from Leonard. Monday rolled around, and unlike in the United States, where it's Memorial Day, in Canada, it's not a holiday. We have our Memorial Day on another day. No call from Leonard. Well, now, this is the day before my insurance expires. I have to rock and roll today or go back to the other company. So I called Binbrook, and I said, could I speak to Leonard? Oh, he's not in. He won't be in until Wednesday. I said, well, that's nice. He promised me a quote. It's a difficult time. We're moving our office. I said, well, you're obviously not very hungry for business. He promised me a quote. It's not a complicated matter. You know, this is a typical homeowner's policy. I don't have a rare collection of Van Gogh paintings or anything special to insure. Couldn't get a quote. But Leonard's busy until tomorrow. Well, tomorrow won't do. So I'm back with the original company. Well, I called them. There are times when I wonder, are these businesses really hurting? So I call this guy, and I eventually get to a guy. And I say, I'd like to renew my insurance policy. Okay, what's your policy number? So I give it to him. What's your name? Well, I'd already told him, but it was fine. What's your address? Okay, tell him. What's your date of birth? I said, what does it matter? I want to give you money. Well, we have to identify you. I said, you are identified me. I gave you the insurance policy number. I confirmed my name, my address. Yet it's endlessly intrusive. Well, he got right angry with me. He was telling me it's for my good. I said, it's not my good. I'm paying for my own insurance. It might be unusual if, say, I call up and say, I'd like to pay for my neighbor's insurance. By the way, what's his insurance number? No, this is just the endlessly intrusive bullshit. Well, you know what he actually said to me? If you yell, I'll hang up on you. I told him as well, you don't seem very hungry for our business. I'm a repeat customer. I've been with these people, I'd say, probably a decade or so. And, you know, I often say this, and it's not really a joke. You know you're in Canada. Because the customer is always wrong. I know, at one point I said, well, do you need my shoe size as well? All this identifying you. Well, he said, well, I wouldn't be able to tell you how much you owe. I said, I already know how much I owe. I've got the bill in front of me. You know, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't bother you to be pushed around. And, if you're cool with that, well, you know, I guess be my guest. But I get sick and tired of businesses just lording it over you. Well, yesterday there was an obituary in the Globe and Mail for one Cécile Rolle-Tanguy. They asked the name Cécile Rolle-Tanguy may not be bouncing around in the head of your brain there, so who is she? Well, she was a resistance fighter. That means a communist. You see, the French Resistance, while it got a good name after the war, or it became part of the legend, and part of the legend was everybody in France during the period 1940 to 45 was in the resistance. Well, actually, very few people were. Many Frenchmen welcomed the German occupation as better than the communism that they might otherwise be facing. So the resistance was largely communist, and you have got to read this glowing obituary which comes from the New York Times with some caution. Anyway, Cécile Rolle-Tanguy died on May the 8th at her home in Montreux, which is about 120 miles from Paris. And here we get into the good stuff. Miss Rolle-Tanguy joined the resistance at the age of 21 after the National Socialists moved into Paris. She acted as a clandestine liaison for her husband Henri Rolle-Tanguy, a prominent communist and a colonel of the French Forces of the Interior, who worked alongside General Charles de Gaulle and his London-based Free French Forces. Not afraid of taking risks, Miss Cécile Rolle-Tanguy would sometimes disguise herself by changing her hairstyle and adopting a code name. No, I'm not Cécile, I'm Brigitte Bardot, but okay, code name. Using forged documents, she was allowed to pass through German checkpoints and go from one part of Paris to another. She carried machine guns, grenades, ammunition, and sensitive documents, sometimes hidden in sacks of potatoes in her child's baby carriage. So she's part of the underground terrorist movement of the so-called resistance. In August 1944, hidden in the catacombs of Paris, she helped her husband organize the uprising. On August 19, she put up posters calling for immediate revolt against Hitler's occupying forces. France is calling you to arms, citizens, to arms. And this is from the French national anthem, the Marseillaise, aux armes, citoyens. So, a week later, Paris was liberated, and General de Gaulle drove triumphantly down the Champs-Élysées. Miss Rolle-Tanguy was the only woman he invited to a reunion to thank the resistance that was held on August the 26th at the Paris City Hall. So knowing she was a communist, that was one of the ambivalent things about Charles de Gaulle. No doubt in some ways, he was a French nationalist. But he certainly had strange allies. Marguerite Marie-Cécile Le Bihan was born on April 20th, 1920, in Royan, and her father, François Le Bihan, helped found the French Communist Party in 1920. As a communist, he was sent in 1943 to Auschwitz, where he died. Her mother, Germaine Jacquinet, was also a member of the resistance. So cutting out a little bit of the detail and drama, we're talking about a communist family. Miss Cécile Roll-Tanguy left school at age 16 and joined Jeune Fille de France, a Communist Party organization that fought for gender equality. Just as an old communist this woman is. Okay. That same year, she started doing secretarial work for the Paris Metallurgical Workers Union. There she met Henri Roll-Tanguy, a foundry worker and union official. When the Spanish Civil War broke out in 1936, Mr. Henri Roll-Tanguy fought alongside the Spanish Republicans. He returned wounded in 1938, and they married a year later. It said he went off and fought in the Spanish Civil War. You have to realize that the people he fought for, the Republicans, were the communists. This is a fairly consistent story. Anyway, she leaves behind four children, et cetera, which is probably not of any great interest to us at this point. But what I find fascinating is the glorification of this communist. I won't make a big issue of it. It's important that we know the news. This borders on the incredible. There's a very generous government plan to help people who become unemployed, who have lost their jobs, being furloughed or let go or fired because of the coronavirus, so to help them. Over 3 million people have already taken advantage of this. It's worth $2,000 a month. Okay. However, the government will no longer check as to whether you are even entitled to work in Canada. So, foreign students, people here illegally, refugee claimants, people who are already being ordered deported, the sky's the limit. No check on your background. And a director went out just recently, it applies to anyone with a 900 series social insurance number. People ranging from students to refugee claimants to temporary foreign workers and executives transferred from other countries. None are Canadian citizens or permanent residents. They're just passing through to one degree or another. And they can claim this $2,000 a month. It's insane. But Sergio Karras, a Toronto immigration lawyer, condemned the new policy, saying it means even an individual who is facing a deportation order or who has already left the country could obtain a CERB, and that's this emergency funding of $2,000 a month. And this immigration lawyer, Sergio Karras, says it's truly astonishing. The person could potentially be overseas if the payment is going into a Canadian bank account. That's extremely troubling. Now, you have to understand, these people are not Canadian citizens, nor even landed immigrants. They're temporary foreign workers, people here illegally, for instance. They have no legal status in Canada, but they're entitled to Mawali. The lawyer Karras continues, that money is not free. That money is going to have to come out of someone's pocket at some point. It's going to be the taxpayers of Canada, citizens or not. And although the people doling out the money are supposed to inquire if the person is legally allowed to work in Canada, the person doesn't have to provide any evidence. It's all on the honor system. This is corrupt to an extraordinary degree. Well, my friend Brad Love, the voice of the working man, a citizen journalist, lives up in Fort McMurray, British Columbia, in Fort McMurray, Alberta. Now, Fort Mac has gone through a terrible economic disaster, largely because of the pains in the oil fields. Anyway, here's a report on a recent incident. Early in May, there was major flooding in downtown Fort McMurray as two rivers, which converge, spilled their banks because of a massive ice jam, a once in a half century disaster. So a lot of mess. And Brad writes, 2 weeks ago, an ice jam on our two converging rivers caused a major flooding in Fort Mac's downtown core. The RCMP sat there day and night in their cruisers, blocking streets leading into the deserted, flooded, and penniless neighborhoods. 12,000 people fled or were housed in COVID-closed hotels or oil work camps to the north of town. It's a total calamity. So now a massive cleanup of washed out basements, banks, malls, and cars is underway. The river is clear and flowing, although there is ice the size of cube vans littering the shoreline. The cops all left, only to be replaced by third world security guards galore. Boil water signs for the entire town are in effect, while the Salvation Army hands out cases of bottled water to downtown folks only. Even their homeless shelter was hit. And just like the fire 4 years ago, my city is now jammed with out of town workers cleaning up a sodden mess, while my city of jobless souls gets nothing. I spoke to our frustrated mayor, who said he's aware of this but can do nothing about it. Compared to the thousands of jobless residents, what does it cost these restoration companies to round up and lure, fly them here, have them in oil camps for housing, and transport them by bus to the downtown jobs daily? It's lunacy, he says. These people make little money. They spend little on an already dead economy. Locals get no work. It's a lose-lose-lose situation. Am I the only one who has observed this? And how do these companies assemble such a massive workforce of low-pay labor so quickly? Most of whom are young, black and white, and often look like homeless or street kids, or temporary foreign workers and Filipino cheap labor market. And now this latest invasion is just too much. A Riverside area that was burned out in the fire 4 years ago was advised not to rebuild by city council due to previous flooding. But they ignored the order, and guess what? They flooded out again. Most in town are not insured for this. And as I drive around now, the now open streets, I see piles of wet home furnishings piled up along the curbsides. Most parks, businesses, and malls remain shuttered. Abandoned homes are everywhere, and even new homes rebuilt after the fire are empty. Where is everyone? Yes, and Brett also makes a very, very good point. Why did these companies doing the cleanup? That's not the restoration. That'll come later. But doing the cleanup, why did they not hire from the large pool of unemployed people in Fort McMurray? All sorts of people lost their jobs in the oil patch. But add to that, all sorts of people who've also lost their jobs because of the coronavirus. Why? And it's a very good question. Why? Well, we should not let that go. I'm going to play some music now by Randy Travis. Randy's a man who's had some troubled history, bad bout with drinking, some brushes with the law, but in many ways turned his life around, and is a man with a wonderful, powerful voice. And hope you like it. This is Randy Travis.
Operator, please connect me with 1982. I need to make apologies for what I didn't do. I sure do need to tell her that I thought the whole thing through, and now it's clear that she is what I should have held on to. They say folks that I used to know, where everyone like last friends that you like to hang around. When you look my way, they're always looking down. And I'm tired of you spending every dime I make to finance this way of life I've learned to hate. I'm going back to a better class of losers. There's a town that has really got me down. I need friends who don't pay their bills on home computers and to buy their coffee beans already ground. You think it's disgraceful that they drink $3 wine? One third glass of blues suits me fine. You said the grass is greener on the other side, but where I stand I can't see grass at all. And the concrete and the steel have changed the way you feel. It takes more than caviar to pound a ball. I'm going back to a better class of loser. This uptown living really got me down. I need friends who don't pay their bills on home computers and they buy their coffee beans already ground. You think it's disgraceful that they drink $3 wine? A better glass of blues suits me fine. Suppose I called you up tonight and told you that I love you, and suppose I said I want to come back home, and suppose I cried and said I think I finally learned my lesson, and I'm tired of spending all my time alone. If I told you that I realize you're all I ever wanted, and it's killing me to be so far away, would you tell me that you love me too? And would we cry together? Or would you simply laugh at me and say, I told you so? Someday you'd come crawling back and asking me to take you in. Thank you.
Great ballad by Randy. This is Three Wooden Crosses. I played it last night and I
teacher, a hooker and a preacher, riding on a midnight bus bound for Mexico. One was headed for vacation, one for higher education, and two of them were searching for lost souls. That driver never ever saw the stop sign, and 18-wheelers can't stop on a dime. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That farmer left to harvest a home in 80 acres, the faith and love for growing things in his young son's heart. And that teacher left her wisdom in the minds of lots of children, and did her best to give them all a better start. And that preacher whispered, can't you see the promised land, as he laid his blood-stained Bible in that hooker's hand. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That's the story that our preacher told last Sunday, as he held that blood-stained Bible up for all of us to see. He said, bless the farmer and the teacher and the preacher. He gave this Bible to my mama, who read it to me. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, now I guess we know. It's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway.
Randy Travis, this is Paul Fromm, back with you again tomorrow on The Funny Side of Me.